Good morning. I'd like to thank the organizer of this meeting for this wonderful opportunity. It's a great meeting. So I actually changed the title a little bit. It's now a clinical and computing issue, since I realized a lot of you are actually applied mathematician. So all the problems actually I'm presenting here are clinically driven. So let's just start with this IGRT roadmap. So this is where we are. You know, the conventional radiation therapy is a sequential process. Imaging, and then 3D modeling, and treatment planning, and then patient setup and treatment delivery. So basically, if you go any clinic these days, most of them actually are treating patients this way. When we talk about IGRT, really, so this is the new component we are talking about. So IGRT is really a loose concept, can cover a broad spectrum of new technology. So on the imaging side, we talk about, 4D imaging and the biological imaging. And then on the modeling, 4D modeling, Christy actually just, you can. Oh, later? Oh. Okay. Great. So the 4D modeling, once you have the 4D information, you obviously need the new mathematical tools to model the imaging and come up with so-called the 4D model. And then the 4D planning, it's on the way to come, and gated treatment, where you just pick one face rather than, all the faces. So this has actually already happened in the clinic. We do it, in like 30% of a lung patient are being treated using gated treatment. And, on the delivery side, we talk about cone beam, cone beam 3D, 4D cone beam guidance. And obviously, we're also working on the adaptive radiation therapy, which interface between the cone beam imaging and also treatment planning. So you're really breaking the boundary between different processes. Okay, so IGRT is really just trying to solve, three major problems in radiation therapy. One is interfraction organ motion, and the other one, interfraction, and the third one is really the target definition. So, I'll try to cover each one of this subject. So let's just get started with the interfraction organ motion. So on the to deal with the interfraction organ motion, we have a new imaging tool, 4D CT and 4D PET, and also a 4D MRI. So currently, if you go to any clinic, again, so this is where we are. We actually have a really fast, like so-called the fifth generation CT scanner, which the speed rotation is much faster than the bridging cycle. So bridging cycle typically is 5 seconds, 6 seconds, and the rotation of the X-ray source and detector is like less than half second. But we are using the scanner in most clinics actually in a 3D fashion, meaning that you just take a snapshot of the patient. And PET is also a time average imaging. When you're using a PET scanner to acquire a PET image, you talk about 10 minutes acquisition time if you use a PET CT. So which is really a time average of about 200-300 bridging cycle. So it's a time average image. And when we talk about 4D CT, so this is actually our very first 4D CT image 2 years ago. Not because this is a good image, but because it was historical in our clinic. But anyway, so this is a typical 4D CT image. In a nutshell, 4D CT is essentially a stack of 3D CTs, each corresponding to a time point. So typically, you have 10 faces, and then, each corresponding to, one of the points inside the bridging cycle. So how do we get 4DCT? Well, if you have, basically there are two problems you need to solve. One is you need a lot of projections, right? In a 3DCT, typically you need one rotation, you take over 600 projection. So when you go to 4DCT, if you want 10 phases, that basically means you need to 600 times 10, so about 6,000 projections. And the other thing is you have to really time stamp each projection, or at least, in a fast CT scanner, you actually not time stamp the projection, you time stamp each slice, right? Because, the rotation is so fast, like it's the first 600 projection going to corresponding to phase one, and the second 600 projection going to correspond to phase two. So this is, how we acquire a 4DCT image. You put a infrared blocker on the patient chest, and so this go up and down. CCD camera capture the motion. So this is just a the RPM block go up and down, and then the CCD camera record the time signal, and after the CT reconstruction, basically for cut one, you have 10 slices, 10 corresponding to 10 faces, and then this is the this you need actually in a fan beam acquisition, you need multiple table position, because each table position now cover about 2 to 4 cm. So if you want to have a 10 cm tumor, you need a 5 or 10 table position. And then, after you get a face image, each one of them actually have a face tag. So you just need to retrospectively, sort them and group them together. You get 4DCT image. Okay. So 4DCT is in the clinic, really nothing new to talk about it, but one of the problems actually a lot of people have realized is the radiation dose. In a 3DCT, if you do a chest like a thoracic scan, you talk about 2 to 4 centigrade dose to the patient, but that's one rotation. If you rotate the detector 10 times, you're gonna give 5 to 10 times more radiation dose to the patient. And so that actually has become a major concern. If you image some patient whose life expectancy is long, if you image the breast cancer patient who can typically after treatment can at least you talk about 20 years for basically life expectancy. So radiation dose is really a major issue. So we have actually come up with a technology which really just allow you to do the 4D image acquisition using 3D radiation dose. So that's our slogan, right? Marketing. So how do I do that? Actually, it's very easy. It's a computational problem. Well, think about it. This is a phantom. Typically when you do a 4D CT scan, you use 100 mA. Well, the reason you use high current, the pulse length is typically it's 20 milliseconds. But anyway, the reason you use a high current is because you want to get enough photon count in every single voxel inside the patient. If you lower the current, you can still do 4D CT, but the noise level is going to be high. So this is 10 mA acquisition. You can see the image become very fuzzy. The technique actually we have implemented in our clinic is what we can do is we can using a image registration software to register each individual face and then put them back together. If you have a rigid phantom, it's really doesn't take much, right? All you need to do is just put them together, and then once you put them together, the photon count in each box are going to be increased. So this is what you get. If you just put them together, 10 MA after post processing, you can see that the quality of image getting enhanced significantly. It's almost like as good as the 100 MA scan, which is not surprising, right? Because when you reconstruct phase one, you're not only using the information from phase one, but you're also using information from phase two, phase three, and phase 10. So there is one problem. Well, there are two problems, actually. The first problem is, the reason we do 4D CT scan is patient is not a rigid body. So you need actually to use a so-called deformable registration, which Christy has gave a very nice introduction, to register each individual phase. And then you can talk about putting them together. And the second problem is when you actually do the deformable registration, we all know any computer model will not give you 100% accuracy, which means that one voxel, let's say this is one of the voxel. If you have a 10 phase, the voxel are going to be mapped to a different point spatially and also actually intensity wise. So you have actually 10 different value distributed, around this voxel. So typically, we talk about the 2 to 3 millimeter inaccuracy. When you're using a deformable registration. And, how do you estimate what is the best spatial location and also the intensity of this voxel? And that's actually a computational problem. So if you're really looking for, a computational problem in medicine, so this is actually great problem. We don't have a very good handle of this, but what we come up with is really just a very simple-minded estimation problem. We formulate this into a very simple estimation problem. You have 10 fuzzy image. What is the best representation of this 10 set of the image? If you don't have any information, you just simply average them. But you actually can do better by just doing estimation. Well, it's a pretty. It's a huge data set. It depends on one slice of CT. You talk about half a megabyte. If you have a 10 slice, typically we're getting 100 slice for every patient, so which is really just 50 megabyte. And then you have a 10 phase, you talk about 500 megabyte data, image data to manipulate. But if you do what kind of deformable registration model you're going to use, what we use is actually just some simple B-spline, which is really just local model. If you want to include, the node far away from where you want to deform, and then it just go up exponentially. So this is actually one patient, Joe.
Just a quick one asked about that. Is that normally about the least squares estimation, like the suppression of the first derivative?
Yeah, it's pretty much like that. It's like the least square estimation. So this is actually one patient. This is the original low current CT. And this is a post-processing CT. We talk about, a signal noise ratio increase by, twofold, threefold. So what we did is post-image acquisition. You should do this actually in the sonogram space, right? You get face sonogram for every individual face, and then you do the data manipulation over there. But we couldn't do it because GE doesn't give us the raw data. We're working with some Siemens user, actually. Siemens, they provide the raw data. We can do it there, but I don't have any data to show you. So 4D patient model, Christy already gave you a very nice introduction, so I'll try to be very brief here. You know, when we talk about image registration, there are different levels. You know, the complexity can go from rigid, right, where you just have like a translation and rotational. And then you can, the next level is really, so that's non-deformable. And then so-called affine, affine transformation, which is, you know, go to like a 9-degree of freedom. And then, well, actually, affine is a 12. And then the first one is rigid. You have a 6-degree of freedom. And then you can have a non-uniform scaling. So that go up to 9-degree freedom. And then the affine transformation, which allow you to have this spooling transformation, which go to 12. And then, of course, the most general deformation is so-called, you know, deformable registration model. So this is the model we have implemented. It's a really just a simple-minded approach. First of all, you have a fixed image, and then you have a moving image. So the idea is you want to deform, basically you in the computer, you want to deform one of the image in such a way that you have a best match. Of course, you know, the best match, you have to let computer to make decision. You have to have a so-called metric. So this is the computation process. You know, one image is reference image, floating image. You just deform one of the image a little bit so that you do a metric evaluation. Typically, you know, we talk about mutual information, you know, cross normalization. So there are different kind of metrics you can use. It depends on what kind of problem you are solving. And then you just examine the convergency. If you can further improve it, just go back. So it's an iterative calculation process. Otherwise, you know, you stop. So this is an example. So deformable registration, you can change the ugly man to a beautiful girl. Well, basically, you just, you know, iteratively change every voxel until you have a best match between the two images. So that's where you get the computer computation gets stopped. So this is the iterative process. So after the 4D registration is you essentially register each, you know, phase one to phase two, phase three. So you know the time trajectory of each individual phase. So that's basically, this is a 3D, it's just a motion picture of the, you know, after registration. And, you know, what do we do with the 4D model? The first thing is, you know, once you have the 4D model, you actually, you know, every single, basically, you know, the projection of, you know, every single phase, and then you can design a patient-specific margin when you do the treatment planning. So we call this 3.5D radiation therapy because, you know, you do use some patient information, right? Well, the 4D information, but, you know, when you do the treatment, it's still 3D. However, when you do the treatment planning, you know, you have a patient-specific margin. And then, of course, you know, eventually we like to do so-called 4D treatment planning. You optimize your treatment plan in 4D space, not 3D space. Okay, well, another application is what we can do is we can, when you do a 4D CT imaging, a lot of time actually you get an artifact, so-called a binning artifact. So in the presence of a binning artifact, what we like to do is we can actually take that artifact, slide away, and then, you know, use the information from like before and after the two set of image and then do an interpolation. So that's one application. So we come up with once you have the 4D patient model, you can interpolate, you know, any phase you like. So this is just one simple example, before, inhale and exhale. In fact, we can actually derive, you know, all the phases in between inhale and exhale phase. We just have two phase image, inhale and exhale, and then what we can do is build a 4D model and then use interpolation to get all the intermediate phases. This is before, you can see that, this is a checkerboard image. Before, you see a lot of difference between inhale and exhale. That's not surprising. And after registration, you can see the overlap. You know, the checkerboard image you don't see too much difference. And this is subtraction image. This is the before and this is the after. So ideally, you would see a uniform background, but you still, you know, here you can see that there's some error in the deformable registration. Okay. So this, this go back to how, you know, once you have a deformable registration model, you know, one of the big questions is how do you validate, you know, your calculation technique. This is actually one of the ways we can evaluate. We have a few ways to do it. One way is actually like Christy already mentioned, you can find some internal structures, and then use that. You have a predicted position, you have an actual position, you compare them. So in the early days, we actually have some liver patient had some fiducial, implanted fiducial. That serves the purpose of internal fiducial too. So we can, we can predict the position of the fiducial, and then the CT image, we can actually we can see where they are, and then we plot them together to see how well they agree each other. And also, this is actually a difference. Difference between interpolated and actual anatomy. Basically, we have a 4D CT image, and then that's the ground truth. And what we can do is we can use inhale, exhale, and then predict the image, and then to plot the difference between the two. You can see that in most cases, we talk about less than 3 millimeter accuracy everywhere in the space. The other thing is the segmentation. So this issue has been brought up in all the three previous speakers, David and Mike and also Christy. So one of the big issue, actually a very time consuming process, is the segmentation. Clinically, if you want to segment, right now actually all the patients are segmented using manual segmentation, but when you go to 4D imaging, you have 10 phases, so the problem will be really become impractical if you want to segment every single phase, right? Because 3D segmentation is already take a long time. You talk about 20, 30 minutes just to segment the lung, and also the spinal cord, whatever. But once you go to 4D, you talk about tenfold increase in the amount of labor. So what we can do is using the deformable model. Once you have the voxel to voxel correspondence between phases, you can automatically map, the contour from one face to the rest of the faces. And this is actually one of the examples. You can see this is a mapping of the rigid mapping of this phase one, and then if you use your deformed model, you can see that you get a very nice segmentation. Well, I'll talk about collaboration between mathematician and medical physicist. Actually, this is one of the papers we have published recently. We work together with one of our mathematicians, a hardcore mathematician. Basically what the problem we have studied, we studied a very simple problem. When we registered, let's say, two sets of image, CT and the cone beam CT, we all know the cone beam CT actually are very noisy. I guess, one of the fundamental problems is whether this noise will influence the registration. So one of the mathematics students just take one of the image and then just start adding more and more noise. Okay, this is a basically a pepper salt in noise, and then basically 0.1, 0.2. These are different level of noise, and then just to see how that noise influence the registration. And so that's basically the first problem she studied. And of course, you know, we want to solve this problem, basically a registration between a good image and a noise image. So the technique we come up with is a so-called multi-stage registration. You can actually decompose the registration problem into a different spatial scale. It's like you know, wavelet decomposition, but then you can register, you know, at a different scale level. So this is actually an example of that the brain case. If you don't, you know, at a different level, you can see that if you add a little bit noise in one of the image, registration is good. But then 0.2, it's getting worse, and 0.3 essentially. So this is actually ideal transformation. So you can see that the things start getting worse and worse. You know, after 0.3, you get totally meaningless transformation. Using the so-called multi-scale registration, we can actually essentially after like a 0.5, we can register very noisy image. So that's actually one of the advantage. This is one of the example. Basically at scale 5, you can still get very nice registration. Anyway, let's speed, switch the gear. Okay, talk about 4D PET. Okay, 4D PET is also in the clinic. If you buy a state-of-the-art PET CT scanner, you know, you can actually you can do the 4D PET acquisition essentially tomorrow, provided you have this $2.5 million. One of the big problems with current 4D PET is the statistics, right? I mean, in current PET, 3D PET scanner is a 10-minute time average of the basically the positron emission signal. And when you actually using, if you divide this acquisition into 10 phases, that means, you know, each phase gonna is equivalent, the statistic is equivalent to a 2-minute 3D PET acquisition. So that's why actually the statistics is so bad, right? Just imagine you have a 3D PET, you know, acquisition using 2-minute acquisition time. You can almost imagine how bad the image gonna be. So just to show the problem, so this is actually a phantom. You have a tube moving up and down. If you use a regular 4D, you know, the currently manufacturer provided 4D acquisition technique, this is what you would get. You get the original shape, right? But, you know, it's very noisy. So what we actually come up with is a so-called retrospective technique. After you have like a 10 phase, we can register each individual phase using deformable registration, and then put them back together. So which is kind of like the 4D CT dose reduction technique. So if you do that, and you can see that, you know, this is a, you know, greatly enhanced the image. And if you plot the intensity profile, you can see that, you know, this is a 3D. Both shape and you know, it's a smeared image, and also the intensity is not very high. But if you do 4D using the manufacturer provided you technique, you get the shape right, but you don't get, you know, much signal. But then if you use this, if you register each individual phase and then put them back together, you can see there's a huge enhancement in the signal to noise ratio. And this is just a patient study, 3D. It's a liver patient, and 4D, you can see that the image is almost, it's hard to distinguish from the background. But then if you do this so-called retrospective stacking, you get a very nice signal. And this is the intensity profile. You really talk about 3-5 times enhancement in the signal-to-noise ratio without any other, you know, it's all you need to do is just to do some post data acquisition processing. The acquisition process is a shame. So this is a shame patient. All right. So time is up. I want to actually briefly mention, also we actually come up with a so-called model-based PET image reconstruction. So what I did there is really, you know, register each individual face and then put them back together. So ideally, like just similar to the CT case, you know, you like actually to do this, you know, to take information from other faces at the reconstruction stage, not after reconstruction. So this is actually a reconstruction algorithm we have come up. Basically, you know, you can borrow information from other faces before reconstruction. So this is, you know, a schematic drawing what we are doing. We can do a 4D CT scan and then come up with a patient model and include that into the reconstruction process. So essentially it's like, you know, if you have a this is the typical projection in a PET imaging. And if you have a motion, you know, this basically every box is changing. If you don't do correction, you get smear image. However, you can actually, you can do a so-called curved projection image, right? You just follow the pixel. That's what we are doing, model-based PET image reconstruction. And so I'm not going to talk about this since there are so many mathematicians. So one of the clinical implications of the 4D PET is, you know, you really, if you want to do a quantitative PET, and this is actually you know, the SUV or total uptake value, because if you don't have, when you have a smeared target volume, and then your SUV calculation can be wrong. So you have to really using 4D PET image to calculate your total uptake value. Okay, so in pure fraction organ motion, how many minutes I have? Is that zero? Okay. Okay, I'll just, in the spirit of, you know, previous speaker, I'll just really finish in 2 minutes. So let's just, let's talk about cone beam. I think this is exciting. Let's just skip this. So the cone beam, well, one of the major problems actually in cone beam reconstruction, you know, cone beam is in the clinic, you know, Mike and David gave a very nice introduction. So one of the major problems actually in cone beam is just the motion artifact, because the cone beam acquisition is 1 minute, right? It's typically gantry rotation 1 minute. And so this is just one example. You have a static phantom and then, you know, everything perfect. And then if you have a motion, if you use like a fast scanner, like a half second rotation scanner, you don't see that much motion artifact. And once you go to the 1 minute acquisition, you know, you not only see local artifact, you also see the, you know, global artifact. So for the cone beam CT, it's really necessary, just to show the problem again. So this is a motion phantom, static, regular CT, cone beam CT, and with motion, regular CT, you don't see much artifact. And then, you know, the same motion with cone beam CT. So the image getting a clinical case, you can see getting so bad that the image become useless. So similar to actually, you know, this NKI people did, we implemented a 4D cone beam CT on the trilogy. So this is actually the projection acquisition process. So in a nutshell, really, when you want to do a 4D cone beam CT reconstruction, you know, basically you need to face tag each individual projection. So how do we do that? Well, the way we actually do it is we actually can put a BB on the patient's like a skin, and then we can, you know, on the projection space, we can track the trajectory of this BB, and you can see that this is one of the projections. You can see this is there's a minimum. We use computer to track this location and then plot it as a function time. So that basically gave you the tag for each individual projection. And this It's a clinical study. I swear this is almost last slide. So this is a 40 cone beam, and this is a 40 regular CT. Where's motion? Well, anyway, so this is just a one of the snapshots. 3D and 40, you can see this image getting so much better. A phantom study, three static motion, you can see this this change, the air gap. But once you go to this 40 cone beam, you can see you even with a very limited projection, you recover the geometric shape. And then once you and then if you slow down the gantry, it's getting image getting better and better. All right. Guess sorry for the delay.
No worries. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.